I wasn't thinking about that. I was genuinely getting my business degree and I was going to law school, and dance was always just going to be fun and on the side as like a hobby. I was going to be the dancing lawyer. That's what I always thought. And then
oh, yeah, I'd hire you for sure, buddy. What? Why would I hire you? Stop dancing. Work on my case, buddy.
What is up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Studio North podcast. We are super excited for this episode today with our guest. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the 2013 and 2014 World Hip Hop Champion. He is the 2015 Body Rock Champion, 2017 and 2019 Vibe Champion. He is the co-director of Brotherhood as well as Northside, esteemed director at Studio North as well as faculty member. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for the one, the only, Adrian Vendiola.
Thank you for having me. I was an hour late, so.
Welcome to the pod.
Thank you.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I was, you know, like I'm not great at English. It's my second language.
Is it actually?
It is.
100%.
Yep. And I'm not great at Tagalog either. So I don't know. I can't really speak. But here we are.
So take us back. You were born in?
I was born in the Philippines.
Which city?
Good question. San Pablo. Yes. And then I moved when I was 5. So, and then I remember like telling my mom that I didn't want to go to school because I was so scared about like having to learn English. And then 2 weeks later, all I could speak was English.
Wow. You know,
but I'm not great at both languages anyway, so.
I'd say you're great English for sure. That's awesome. So that's maybe something that our listeners might not know about you. What else do our listeners might not know about Adrian Vendiola?
I love magic.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, his card trick.
We want to receive the card trick?
Absolutely. Get right into it.
I don't have my wallet, so can't.
I'm going to go get mine.
All right. Card trick. Smoke trick.
Yep.
Oh, all of them.
That it's like my go-to, like when I go to a new place, you know. Yeah, you just gotta hide the bank details.
Oh. Yeah, okay, not that card.
The WeWork card.
Okay. Ooh, the Tesla key card. All right, you ready for this?
Wow.
Can you even see that? I'm putting it on my shirt. And then you give a little. Oh wait, you give a little.
It's actually and so good.
That's about it.
Where did your love for magic start?
Good question. I think watching like America's Got Talent and like Penn and Teller. Yeah. I don't know. I just love being deceived. you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. Can you do the, can you also do the smoke trick?
Sure. It's a weird setup though.
No, this is the best.
We're not getting anything done today. Okay, here we go.
Okay. You got this. Have you seen him?
Yeah.
It's like crazy. Wow.
Can you even see that?
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure you can see that in the.
How good are these cameras?
Very good. That's right, awesome. Where did you learn that one?
I just YouTubed it. I one day was like, I wonder if you could, and so I YouTubed make smoke come out of mouth, and there it was.
I haven't seen anyone else be able to do that. You're the only person I know.
Jerome Hoxson can do it.
Really?
Yeah.
Dang, that's so awesome. Okay, yeah. So two people we know.
Yeah, two people.
All right, so that's
and that's about it, folks.
Thank you so much for being on the pod. We'll see you next time. Why don't you take us a little into how you kind of got into dancing? So moved here when you were 5. How did that start for you?
Yeah. I guess like just watching, honestly, like the first dance thing I ever saw was probably like the Jabberwockies on America's Got Talent. And I remember like.
America's Best Dance Crew?
Oh, sorry. Yes. America's Best Dance Crew. I don't know my history apparently. I remember even for Halloween, I asked for like the mask and then I would just like put it on. I thought it was like the coolest thing. Yeah. I think I was around grade 5 or something. Just like this like chubby Filipino kid, like putting on the mask, like doing that, you know, that's where it kind of first started. Just like, I guess, love for dance and like hip hop. And then I think I really started dancing like in grade eight, like in high school, with Michael DeLava, who's just like, because I used to make like Seawalk videos in grade seven. Actually, there it is. Grade seven, started making Seawalk videos because I saw it on YouTube, thought it was like the coolest thing. And then like
really good. Cue video. Yeah. We're going to cue a video.
We'll
show
find us. A video. But and then like making those clips on like Windows Movie Maker. And then putting like my Seawalk name in the bottom right corner of the screen. You
what
know?
Was your Seawalk name?
Let's not talk about that. Let's skip that. And then Michael was kind of just like, hey, do you Seawalk? Do you want to try dancing? And I was like, sure. And then it was from there, I guess, I just fell in love with it like so deeply. And then joined Praise Team.
Jay Hoolies,
you know, Jay Hooligans, Johnson Heights. Met you, said no to Brotherhood at first. And then,
talk about that.
Yeah. And then, so we were dancing Praise Team, trained there for a really long time. And yeah, kind of just evolved into, I guess, a career, which is crazy, which is something I never thought I could do or was even a possibility. I feel very I'm just like a teenager from like Surrey, you know, like that's kind of like my mentality. So to be able to like travel now and like teach all over the world is like really feels surreal. So I'm just trying to soak it all in. So yeah.
Okay, well, take us back to declining Brotherhood. That's right. An interesting story.
Yeah, it was I think grade 10
and
2011. Yeah, grade 10, grade 11, and Scott asked me to be in Brotherhood, and I said no because like. Honestly, like pre-calculus 11 was just too much for me. And chemistry, it was just a lot, you know? It was a lot on my plate. I was going through a lot as a teenager. And I said no. And then the next year I joined. Yeah. It's all good. We made it.
I remember that vividly. Yeah. I was just like, dude, you have to. You're like, you're so good. You could even tell back then. Like, you were so good. You had so much potential. And then, no, I'm a little busy with high school. I was like, is this guy being serious right now? But I'm glad. And then look at how it all turned out now.
Look at us now.
Look at us now.
In this room. good times.
You kind of touched on, you know, now pursuing dance as a career, but that wasn't always the case. So you recently decided to kind of go full time with it. What were you doing before that? And what was that transition like?
Well, I was, I went to school for therapeutic recreation.
And what, for people that might not know what that is.
Great question, man. That's a great question. The way they like phrase it is pretty much just like therapy through play. This work settings that I would be in is in, like care homes or rehab centers. And a lot of it is like assessing like what a client or a patient needs and then trying to see how you can help by not just doing like exercises, but like by like creating activities for them. So for example, if somebody was in, had a brain injury and then they lost motor control, like fine motor control with their hands, creating like activities, not just like exercises, but like playing chess with them or doing other stuff like that, or playing card games as a form of therapy. And then you just pretty much assess if that's like working and seeing like how you can rehab them. So yeah, that's kind of what it was. So went to school for that. And then like 2 years later, got my diploma, then started working right away. I happened to get like, I landed a full-time job at an acquired brain injury place. So I guess I was just working there and honestly, like really enjoyed it. It was like, a little scary at times because like with brain injury, sometimes like some of the clients can be violent. And so that was a little scary, but I did really like enjoy it. And I felt like I made like really great relationships there. But I just felt like even though the money was great and this was kind of the first time I had like a full-time job making consistent money, felt like I could like pay bills and like save very adult. It was cool. It was a really cool feeling. I just always felt like dance was just like knocking, you know? And I don't know who said it, but I just remember someone saying like, oh, like you have to answer the door before it, like before they stop knocking, you know? And then I guess I would just get like opportunities to dance and teach, and like having a full-time job was like a little tricky. Like I couldn't just be like, hey, like not coming in. Like I had to fill in a form. Like I'm taking this time off to go do this. And then I had to wait to get approved before I could even say yes to anything. And I think at one point there was just too much. There was like too much for me to just ignore it anymore. So I remember going home and like talking to my mom, and I had kind of mentioned like, hey, like this is where I'm at with dance, and like the opportunities are coming up for me. I'm scared, but I also like, I can't say no. And I remember her saying, you know, if there's anyone that should do it, it should be you. And this was kind of like when I first started dancing. It's not like my parents were super supportive right away. They eventually became really supportive of it, but at first my dad was like, no, that's not happening. You're gonna focus on on school, yeah, you know, like you're saying. Yeah. And so this was just like from my parents, like coming from them, it was just such a big switch. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of, I think, what really pushed me to pursue it. And I grew up kind of like scared. Like I was always scared of things. I think scared of the unknown and scared of not having security or safety. Like I was scared of the dark and yeah, just scared of not knowing things. So I think pursuing something like dance where it's so volatile was scary, but I was for the first time in my life okay with it. And yeah. And then after that conversation, I didn't resign fully. I switched over to like casual work. And then eventually after a couple years, it was just, I wasn't working there anymore just because I couldn't commit to them. And I also felt like if I was somewhere, I wanted to be there like 100%. So yeah, like now just pursuing dance. I mean, COVID happened. So I like briefly worked again just because there was like no dancing anyways, mm-hmm. but now we're kind of back into like the swing of things. So yeah.
What advice would you give, you know, a dancer who right now is in the similar boat that you were in, where they want to pursue dance full time, they want to make that leap, but they're not sure, or, you know, they're having those thoughts. If you could kind of give them some advice of what to do, if you could kind of talk to younger Adrian.
That's so difficult because I think everyone's like situations are different, right? My situation, like, I think comes from a very privileged situation where my parents are super supportive of it, and my parents were willing to, like, help me out for those first few years if it meant, like, staying at their place for free or, like, them buying me food all the time, you know? So I think I can recognize that I did have privilege there, no matter how hard it was for me to say yes to or fully commit to. But, I think, I don't know. There's so many different thoughts that are going on now because I was like kind of scrolling through Twitter, or X as they call it now. and there was kind of a discussion in a similar field where it was about like content creating or like gaming or streaming. Yeah, yeah. And somebody said, like, don't have a plan B. Like, if you should just fully commit to what you're doing, because if you have a plan B, you're always just going to fall back onto it. But I can also see like the other side of it where, like having a plan B makes sense because like with like costs of everything going up nowadays, like it's really scary and you just don't know where the world is going to go. Mm-hmm. So I have no advice for the young.
I think what you did was I think it made so much sense. Like you, cause I remember during that time you were going through that transition and like wondering, okay, do I go fully into it? Or do I still keep, you know, this side hustle. And I'm all for people keeping side hustles. Like I know what they mean when they're talking about, you know, oh, so you don't have a plan B. I think that I feel like that's very, very like simplistic or like not taking into consideration a lot of other factors. And right. I think one of them being like a lot of these, you know, a lot of these side hustles or passion projects, like in the very beginning, they don't really make any money. And that doesn't mean you would it be any better just to completely starve, but still be passionate about what you're doing?
Right.
Or, you know, you're the actress or actor in LA and you're working at Starbucks and then you're still you're still pursuing that, but you need to work at Starbucks in order to fund your living situation so you can stay in LA for a month. So I have no knock against side hustles, but I think what you did really well was you just like navigated, and depending on the market per se, or depending on like what opportunities were coming your way, when you started to see there was probably like a threshold you hit where you're saying, okay, I'm actually turning down opportunities because of my work, rather than the other way around, which would be you're going to stop so you can dedicate more time and just like wait for opportunities to come your way. But you were still hustling, doing multiple things. And then as opportunities started coming in, then you're saying, okay, this seems like the right time to make the jump, make the leap.
Yeah.
So
for sure. Yeah. I also remember having like a conversation with Kelvin, me trying to convince him to quit his full-time job.
We always do that.
But I remember like, I think it was 2019 before COVID, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Cause if he did, then like, that guy's screwed. No, I just remember like being at Mist and kind of, talking to Kelvin and just saying like, hey, I think you're actually really talented. And I think you have like a future in this as like an educator. I don't understand why you won't like fully commit to it. And I remember him saying, well, I just want it to be on the side. Mm-hmm. I want dance to be fun. I want to be able to come home from work and go to dance and enjoy it.
Dude, 100%.
I don't want dance to be like my bread and butter and like my way of making money. And I remember being like, this guy's so stupid. just I thought it was like the dumbest thing.
Yeah.
And then like I understood now, I think as I'm older, I'm like, okay, like I can see why he wants to do that, or why it's kind of smart to, or why it's okay for it to just be on the side. Like nobody has to pursue it all the time as a full-time career, like making money out of it. Cause he can just come to it and just enjoy it for what it is, rather than feeling like, oh, I need to do this because I need to pay for my car, or like I need to pay for my phone bills or my rent, which is honestly sometimes like the feeling that I get, you know, relying solely on dance as my like finances. So like I totally understand now. And so I think it's, for me, I'm trying to find a balance of yes, like it as work, but also still like my passion and enjoyment. And I think just finding the balance is, it's always, everything's just balance, you know?
That's, so. I agree with you. That's probably the hardest thing when your passion becomes your full-time gig. I don't know. I can only speak from my experience, but from what I've talked to other people about too, there is this sense where as soon as your passion becomes your full-time, that spark, it doesn't go away. It just fades a little bit. And because the realization kicks in that this is your job and like you have a responsibility to pull up. Like I still remember being in school at university and we had this like little dance room, and I would remember being in class all day, studying all day. And I was just like fired up to like get in the studio, and like that 1 or 2 hours, that energy that I was like, oh my gosh. And like so much like release and expression. And now I look back and that was like a very, I think just learning to appreciate that time, that was like a very unique time where I was in school. I was not trying to be a dancer. I wasn't, or a choreographer, teacher, anything. It was just for fun and it was a passion project. And that spark back then, the reality is if you do take your passion full time, it changes. Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. But understanding that before making that leap and making that jump, I think that's really important. And that's something that Kelvin's like so wise that he kind of already knew that before even having to take that leap, is that it changes. Right. And for some people, that's okay. And then for some other people, they want to keep it. So I agree with what you said. I think it really just depends on the person. Some people are able to, you know, take dance full time and they're still able to enjoy it and still make a career off of it. And then other people
they just prefer to have other sorts of income as well at the same time. And that to them is what works. So right. I think just building off what you said, everyone's a little different. It's just maybe the answer is there is no answer and that it depends Yikes. On
crazy.
It depends on who you are. And
then
like,
that's it. And
But I do think it's a question that, you know, I feel like young dancers ask all the time
right.
and like they look to us as
For sure.
people that are doing it and like wondering, you know, looking for answers. And sometimes we don't tell them enough. So here's the answer.
Right.
There is
right.
no answer.
There is no answer.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, when did you feel, okay, now I'm
now he's the interviewer.
Now I'm the interviewer. I'd be conducting this interview. The office?
Yes. Yeah. Pulling the table. That is all, thank you.
When did you...
Cornell will be hearing from you.
Okay, so when did you feel like you were going to make that jump? Like, what was it? I feel like you, I mean...
Yeah.
From my... experience like growing up watching you
mm-hmm.
I feel like yours started really early your career in dance
right
or at least the opportunities came for you really early like
for sure.
like Urban Dance Camp
yeah
was gig. Like your first gig
right yeah
so
yeah it was and that was third year university I still remember I was in my dorm room and I got an email from UDC and that was at the same time where I wasn't chasing it. I wasn't thinking about that. I was genuinely getting my business degree. I was going to law school and dance was always just going to be fun. And on the side is like a hobby. I was going to be the dancing lawyer. That's what I always thought. And then
oh, yeah, I'd hire you for sure. Mom. What? I hire you. Dad, stop dancing. Work on my case, buddy.
Just Discord.
Oh my gosh.
And so yeah, maybe not a great idea, but back then I thought it was going to be a great idea. And then yeah, so it was third year university, and then that was the time. That was when I think once that happened. And then people found out about it, and this people started to see it. That then more doors started opening. So it was only in end of third year, beginning of fourth year university, which is when I went to Ottawa in fourth year. And that's kind of when I said, okay, I'm going to graduate. I'm just going to get my degree, and then I'm just going to take a year. And that was my thing, was because I was going to start writing the LSATs and prep for law school. So in that fourth year, I just said, I'm going to finish this degree, and then I'm going to take a gap year. So, but even then, like, dude, it's crazy to think back then and think about that time where like so much has changed. And it was a huge risk. I like moved back in to my parents' basement and dude, like I'm sure you felt this before. You sit and wait. Like I was waiting. For like a day. And then I was like, I need to do something. So then that was like concept videos. That was like teach choreographing. That was like being active. But there was a season there where I was like second guessing and being like, did I make the right call? Like, you know, I graduated in, it would have been June, I guess, or just before that, maybe May. And I just remember moving back in with my parents and my parents just being like, okay, like, you know, what's going, like, what are you going to do? And I was just like, I think this is going to work, but I'm in a season where I don't know. So right. I'm just going to kind of wait and see what happens. And because there were some opportunities that happened before, and then I was just waiting, and then more opportunities, and then the snowball kind of rolled. Right. And then things kind of took off from there. But I feel like, and sometimes I feel guilty about it, like, I never looked up to, you know, teachers and traveling choreographers and been like, that's what I want to do one day. I literally was just like, let's just have fun with Brotherhood and let's like goof around and let's be really good and win a bunch of stuff. But I never really dreamt of like one day traveling and teaching. And then when I started to do it, I kind of felt like a sense of guilt that I'm like, this wasn't like the dream per se. I just started going through doors that were opening. Mm. And then I would talk to other people and they would say like, oh, that was always my dream to, you know, travel and teach. And so I had to wrestle with that for a little bit, but I got over it. but it's still, there was a period of time that where it just kind of felt like, oh man, I feel like other people really, really like they've always dreamt of this and right. I'm just like so lucky I get to do it.
Right.
So I don't know, perspective is everything, but that's kind of when I decided to take a stab at it.
Right.
But yeah, like I said, when you do that and when it does become your career, it changes. So right. just as long as people know that relationship when you do, and I think it's literally with every art. It's not just dance. Right. It's like singing, rapping,
sports,
yeah. literally like, yeah, I talk to athletes and they're pursuing it the full time. It becomes a job. And right. with a job, you have to be disciplined. You have to work hard. You can't right. just rely sure. on the passion. Whereas that's right. what we used to do back in the day was just rely on the passion. I'm feeling inspired or I'm feeling like I want to choreograph.
Right.
And then now it's like, there's no feeling in this. You're teaching, you have to,
right.
you have to choreograph. And so kind of throwing it back to you, how do you deal with that? How do you deal with that pressure of, you know, you've got directing multiple groups, you're teaching, you're still traveling. How do you come to terms with that pressure of this is a job I need to, pull up, but also, I don't know, when I watch you dance, it looks like you're having a lot of fun. You're really enjoying it still.
It's pretty good. It's pretty fun. good question. I think I've like been preaching a lot on like discipline and at least specifically like dance and like what we do and discipline versus like creativity, you know, and I think that's kind of a question that I get a lot is what's better or discipline versus inspiration, right? And I feel like you can use both, right? So I'd like to have this like graph is kind of what I imagine. I don't know if you taught me this or I just made it up myself, but like it's mine now anyways. I honestly feel like inspiration, like creativity for me is like very up and down. Like some days you wake up and it's just greatest idea ever. Yeah. We should make fun of ourselves on stage.
Literally, that was you, bro. You came up with that and sorry, keep going. I'll talk about that.
And then some days you literally like, I can't even choreograph like two counts. Like don't know what move to do for this like one bass. Like it doesn't even matter, you know? But I feel like creativity is very this. And it has like its seasons. And I think that's okay. I think that's part of being an artist. I think that helps fuel artists to create and then take rests, you know. But I do, I honestly feel like I'm very disciplined when it comes to like at least what I do, as in choreographing for teams and choreographing for classes, where I think I've built this discipline for like the last, I guess, 15 years that I've been dancing now, 14 years, where it's just like slowly building it up. And so now I have this as kind of my standard. Mm-hmm. My standard is high in terms of like how much work I'm able to put in, no matter how tired I am. Yeah. And when the creativity is low or like maybe the inspiration is low, I still have this to like base it off. But if this and this creativity and inspiration here can like meet,
yeah.
And when it does meet, like I just feel like magic happens, you know? So I think like building the discipline to like be able to have a standard. And then when you can meet it is, I think when like really things start to like really special things start to be made, you know?
Dude, 1,000%. So, yeah. What does that look like practically for you? How do you stay disciplined? Like in theory, it's just says like, yeah, I've worked it out, but it's like, is that you choreographing on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, or like locking yourself in a studio for 1 hour every day? Like obviously we know you ask people, which I think is super dope. Like you just ask people to come over and you're making choreo on the spot,
right?
And with them,
yes.
Like, and you're testing it on them, but you're like, hey, come over, I need a choreo. And you're literally, as you're teaching them, you're creating it, which I think is like so sick.
Yeah.
I can't die. I've never done that before. I haven't been able to. So that might be one method maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I think like speaking on that, I think for me, the discipline comes from like putting myself in situations where I like am uncomfortable and then forcing myself to like do it. And then that forces me to just build, you know. I might not be great at it yet, but then I'll like be working towards it. So for example, like that that method where I ask people to come over and then I just don't have anything and I'm just gonna teach them. It's just a way for me to create, even if I don't feel like creating. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it also comes down to like, I feel kind of guilty. This person just drove all the way from like Richmond and I gotta make something here. Shout out Rihanna Talento. You know, so like they just spent all this time to like come to my house and like use my studio to create with me. Then like I have to do it. Like I don't have a choice. I can't be like, sorry, it's not flowing today. Let's just go chill or something. Like, no, like we're here for a reason and we got to go do it, you know? And then just doing that over time, even though I think what I'm normally or naturally comfortable with is like sitting on it and like listening to music and like listening to my music in my car and like choreographing when like inspiration hits me, like whatever time of day that is, even in the car, I'm like, oh wow, like I feel something here. I guess just like trying to do the complete opposite of it. Whereas here's a scheduled time, like create now, you have like an hour and a half. So I think doing things that make you uncomfortable or that put you in a space where you're out of your comfort zone is helps build like discipline.
Dude, you're dropping bombs, bro. Right, this is so good. I feel like there's so much gold here. Circle back super quick. I'll let you jump in anytime. We're just going. But speaking of which, like going back to the time when we were in your living room and it was 2019 vibe set. Like, bro, I remember this vividly and it kind of goes to exactly what you're saying, where there you had the discipline, which was we said, guys, creative team, we got to meet up. We got Vibe coming up in like a month. Mm-hmm. We need to come up with a theme or an idea. Like, what are we doing?
Right.
And this was like our second or third meeting at that point.
I think so. Yeah.
Because the first one like flops. Nothing was there. Second one, I think the idea we had going was
I remember it.
Stranger Things. We had this weird, like, because that was hot right then. So we were like, oh, we'll do like a alternate reality. Was that what it's called? Or dimension. And we were like, oh, thinking. And but in my head, I was like, man, this is going to be really hard to pull off. Yeah. And like,
Also, I had never seen the show. So you were like, let's watch episode one. And I'm watching, like, what's going on? This is so scary.
It's a wild series. But I remember everyone was talking about it. Yeah. Like, it was like, it was hot. So that was kind of the idea going. And then we got to this like lull in the meeting. And I was feeling down. I was like, man, this kind of sucks. Like, we're not getting anywhere. And then just out of nowhere, Adrian is just like, guys, what if? And like, I look over at him, I just see him, his eyes just light up and you're like, what if we made a set from all of the hate comments that we've gotten online? And as soon as those words came out of your mind, like I saw it. And this is going to sound super arrogant, but I saw first place. I was like, that's it. Mm. That's the one. Yeah. And like you came up that's when like inspiration hit. You in that moment at the same time that we were being disciplined in saying we need to meet, we need to come up with an idea. So I think that was like a great example of it. Yeah. And I was just, and then dude, that was like one of the most memorable sets, probably my favorite set to date.
Me too. Yeah.
And that was in your living room and you just got hit, dude. I still remember where I was sitting and where you were sitting and you were just like, dude, what if? It was so smart. So genius.
Yeah. It just hit me. It was, I remember what happened. We were, again, like we were kind of in that lull, the meeting, we were 3 hours in, had nothing yet. And we were like, okay, like, I don't know what to do at this point. And I remember we started watching YouTube videos and we were watching like dance videos. I think there was a recent competition, all their videos had just come out. So we were just watching it. And I remember watching this one specific team and they were amazing. I remember we were watching like, whoa, this is great. This is crazy. And then we were looking at their comments and like, whoa, they're getting a lot of hate for this reason, this reason, this reason. And people were just like, they just had so much to say online, you know? And we're like, whoa, this is crazy. And then I think that's when it hit me. Cause I just remembered like that's happened to us too. And I was like, why don't we do that? And I think that's kind of where it all like stemmed from. And then also just finding, I guess, like the silver lining where I guess that like that last comment that we had in the set that just like was a real comment and someone really felt this way and we made someone like really feel a different type of way. Like that was like really inspiring. And I think that's kind of what fueled us to create that set, you know? So yeah, that was a great theme.
Dude. And do you still, like, to this day, does that obviously being a creative and putting yourself out there, you know, like we're all susceptible to hurt feelings and people saying stuff online. I not that I would see that with your stuff at all, but does that ever still come up where, you know, you might see a comment and you know, it might be insensitive or is everything just amazing all the time? And like, everyone's just like loving everything that you're doing, which would make total sense. But, you know, we kind of addressed it in the brotherhood theme. And like you said, it's on what are you focusing on? If you focus on all the negative comments, then yeah, it can really get to you. But also remembering why are we doing what we're doing? And it's right. like to inspire people.
Sure.
But that's like easier said than done.
Yeah.
Cause like I still get affected by if I see something like making fun of, I don't know, my beard or.
Or when you had that mustache.
Dude, I'm going to bring the mustache back, bro. It's fire. I love the stash. But how have you, you know, learned to keep pushing despite, you know, whether it's comments online or maybe it's, you know, judges' feedback at competitions and you're just like, bro, what? This you don't know what you're talking about.
Right. I think I feel like my biggest critic is like myself, you know? So, what people have to say about me in terms of like what I do in terms of dancing or like in terms of like, in terms of dancing, like I've thought it too. And I've probably thought way worse things than you have. So like yes, it hurts and then you heal and then you move forward, you know? But, I don't know. I think like for myself, I'm just, I see so many flaws in like my own self and probably the same with like you, like when you guys watch your own dancing, you're probably like, oh my God, I wish I like didn't hit this angle, but this angle instead, you know? But, I honestly feel like I'm just like my own biggest critic. So like, not that I ever really get a lot of like, negative comments towards like my dancing, but when I do, it's like, you kind of just have to laugh it off. Yeah. And then like a couple days later, like it hurt at first. And then a couple days later, I was like, that's kind of funny. Like, you know, so, I guess just it's built, not that I've built like an immunity to it, but it's just happened a lot. So, you are just able to take it a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Not that it doesn't hurt still, it still hurts, you know, but you grow like resistance to it. And then just understanding sometimes that maybe some comments are valid, but sometimes people will say things for kind of like out of their own like view for themselves, you know, and then just trying to understand that. And I think for me, like just trying to understand what other people might be going through and like each person is their own like human being and they have their own things going on too. And once I have that understanding, like I'm much more okay with like, okay, like it's all good. Mm-hmm. Like I'll take it, you know? So yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just part of adulting, part of
Dude, like wisdom, getting older. Yeah, you know? I think that's huge. I think it's a very like wise view of, or even just like perspective to have while other people might be saying, not that people would ever say anything negative about you or us, but like it's bound to happen because hurt people hurt people. And like you kind of hit it on the head with, you don't know what they're going through and maybe they're just lashing out, you know, as artists and as choreographers and teachers, we really, you know, wearing our heart on our sleeve in the sense of like, we're putting our work out there and it's like super scary sometimes because you know, don't know how it's going to be taken. And out of all people, I feel like you probably wear your heart on your sleeve the most.
Oh yeah, I do not hide in.
Which is like, dude, I think that's just such a cool part of your artistry and your choreography. Like anytime we're watching you, I know what you're I don't know what you're going through, but I feel like I know what you're going through just based off of how you're dancing and your the realm of emotion you can dance in, whether it's, you know, super inspirational and happy, or maybe it's like super sad and deep, or maybe it's super hard and swaggy. Like you can hit all of the levels. Right. Speaking to that, how would you define your style if you had to?
I would say honest, is.
Who is this guy? Hello. Have you been doing that? Are you on podcast before, bro?
English? yeah, honest is, I think, my style. Because you're right. Like, some days I do feel like, you know, like, I feel I can go hard. And, like, I feel these things and I have a chip on my shoulder. And other days it's just, I'm just choosing to, like, feel happy and be free, you know? And, like, kind of hitting all those points. Like, I always thought, like, I think if you were asking me, like, a few years ago what my style would be, I would probably say versatile, right? But now that I think about it, it's just, it's more honest. Like, it's more, this is how I'm feeling today. And, like, I hope you can accept that this is how I feel today. You know, so, yeah, I think honesty for me is kind of where I land, whatever that may be. And I think that's why there's so much, I would say, range in, like, what to expect from me. Like, some classes are just so different from each other. Or some of my choreography is also different. But just, I think I've accepted that I'm, like, a complex person. And that's just me as a complex person putting, like, my heart out there, whether it be online or in class, you know. So, yeah, and I think same thing with, like, whenever I have to do, like, Q&As at, like, competitions and stuff that I'm judging, like, I'm very honest. But in a sense of, like, if I don't know an answer to a question, I'm not going to, like, well, it's because the industry is like this, blah, blah, blah. Like, I was just like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, I have not been in that situation before. I can't, like, speak for it. So I think that is just, like, a reflection of who I am. And I think my dancing reflects that. So, yeah, that's how I see it. That's how I see it.
would it be fair to say, correct me if I'm wrong here, emotions. You feel emotions deeply.
Yes.
Okay.
Very fair.
So, like, yeah. And I think the reason I say that is because I feel like all of the greatest artists in history at some point were very emotional in their art, or, like, crazy. Not saying you're crazy, but, like,
no, I get it.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's a part to that that, and you too, you're like, you feel emotions a lot.
Yeah, I cried on our last podcast.
Oh, yikes.
And, well, like, I feel emotions as well, but I just feel like you two feel emotions deeper, and I feel like that works to your advantage as an artist, because you're able to connect with other people who also feel deeply.
Yes.
And, like, it comes out. So whether, you know, you're Michelangelo or you're, you know, all these creatives in the past, and, you know, Leonardo da Vinci, like, they're... I'm not saying emotions and crazy are the same, but I'm saying, like, as an artist, like, some of the best artists in the world are able, they feel really deeply and they tap into that to create their art. Mm-hmm. And I think you do that. And I think you do that. And I think that's why you guys put out such amazing art, is because you really tap into, you know, what am I feeling that day, rather than just saying, you know, all right, I'm just gonna, you know, put a piece. And there are those days, but I would say, like, for 80, 90% of the time, whatever you're dancing, and I'm like, oh yeah, he's for sure feeling that right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a superpower. So anyone who's, like, thinks that might be a non-superpower, or what's the opposite of a superpower?
A weakness.
Maybe, of, like, oh, I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that. I actually think it's kind of the opposite. I feel like, as an artist, yeah, maybe as, like, a bank teller, it's, like, not the best thing, right? Like, for something where it doesn't apply to the industry. But in art, I feel like that's such a superpower that, to be completely vulnerable and honest, like, I'm not like that per se. I feel like I might have been like that earlier, but I feel like I've mellowed off a little bit, and I'm just more robotic just with how I think and live. But that's just me. But I feel like... some of the greatest artists are able to tap into that emotion and really use it in healthy, like, in a healthy way, which I think, like, expressing through art is a healthy way.
Yes.
Maybe, like, taking it out, or, like, you know, verbally attacking somebody. That's an unhealthy way of doing it.
For sure.
So
I do feel emotions very, very deeply. And also, just to kind of, add on to what you were saying. Like, I think it works really well in art, but I think sometimes in like real world situations, like just trying to have a conversation with people sometimes or conflict, it is difficult. It's very difficult to maneuver through, just because if I'm angry, it feels like I'm the angriest I've ever been, and I'm like almost shaking. And then when I'm sad, like I'm just like, oh, like I'm just so down, you know. But when I'm happy, I'm like just so much joy exuding out of me. And so I think it's just like an extra little bit more. So I think like as a human being, I think as an artist, I think it's really cool to be able to like tap into those things. Sometimes it is difficult though, as like as a person trying to function in like society. I think as I've gotten older, I think in the same sense, I feel like I have mellowed off a little bit. Like I'm like a little more chill. I'm not chill, but I'm like a little bit more, you know, like as like kind of closing in on 30 here.
Hey. Like,
yeah, like it, I do feel like it's starting to neutralize a little bit. And sometimes I do feel that compared to my work before, the it's a little harder for me to tap in. So I really have to, when I'm creating, I really have to focus if that's what I'm trying to do, right? But I think also like at the expense of my art, if it means that I can be an adult that is able to like regulate their emotions properly and in a healthy way, I would rather have that, you know, or I would prefer to have a bit more of that. So yeah, like it balance, right? So 100%. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to switch a little bit to towards like staging. So you're amazing at visuals and just having the vision of things. Like I think you can make great pieces, but then also on stage they like can shine even more. I don't think a lot of people have that gift, so you have that gift. What was the first piece that you put on stage that you were felt like this is like my first time, or that you're like proud of, I guess?
I would say All My Life.
I was hoping you'd say
that. 2017 vibe, All My Life. I think being able to create something that, again, was just felt very honest. And honestly, like, just love that song.
Yeah.
I think grew up listening to it. And so I think I had a like special connection to it. I'm just like thinking about growing up and my parents would play like that type of music. And like as they're cleaning the house, you know, so that's kind of like the music that I like listen to on a daily basis. Being able to create to that was already like such a privilege. And then I guess that was the first time that I like put something on stage, and like was able to kind of orchestrate like movement rather than just like movement on, I like how this is my go-to, but like not just like on my body, but like a space. I think that was my first time that I was really able to fully explore that. And I felt like I was able to like create staging really well, and like I think at the end of the day just was able to get like the feeling out there, where the feeling wasn't just like, oh, you're in love, but it's like a very like there's passion behind this love, and like I want to show you using these dance moves and like the way we take up space. Yeah.
I remember if you felt like, if you think of the set in general, it's like a pretty quirky, fun set, like dating game show.
Yeah.
And then it gets to that piece and dude, just like watching you dance it, two things. One, watching you dance it on stage, you can tell you were feeling that and you were pouring everything into that. And then just a side note, I remember when you were staging it, and I remember some of the guys, We were just looking while you were setting it. We kind of looked at each other and we're like, this is crazy. Like it was the first time for us to see like, not like movement is one thing. And I think this is something you continue to expand on is like creating movement in a solo esque version where it's just made on one body is one thing, but then to be able to create and see it on stage is a whole nother thing. And that was, I think, the first time that we were like, yo, he's got something here. Like this is next level.
Right.
And we could see that you had a vision, you used the stage, you used formations, and we're like, who taught you this? Cause like, I didn't, I am not like, it got to the point where I would just make my own choreography and I'd be like, Adrian, can you just block this? Can you stage it? Cause you're way better at it than I am. So we were just all like, dude, this is like iconic, and we knew it when you were creating it as right. well. So yeah. Sorry, keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, like the staging is, I always like look at it and see if it's getting like the point across. Is it getting like what we're trying to say, like, across the audience, you know? I think another, favorite of mine that I've like staged is We Belong Together. All these, I'm just so in love.
Yeah.
Hey,
let's go, Mary.
Yeah, like I think that's another one where I really like honed in on like trying to create a feeling by just the way we take up the space and the way people travel and yeah, and just kind of just the movement on stage was for me like, again, kind of drawing in on like passion and like more than just like being in love or liking somebody, right? And I think also with like the movements that I chose specifically for that piece, like there was certain like reaches or feels or like crunches where it I remember when I was cleaning, it was like, if you're not feeling the stretch like in your back or you're not feeling it like really come down to your core, you're not doing the movement right. So yeah, I think I don't know what the question is anymore, but yeah, that's kind of what I try to bring when it comes to like formations and staging. It's also like, I don't think about it, so it's hard for me to answer. I just,
good at it.
I just do it.
Must be nice.
I just do it, and I think it comes a little organically because, for example, with Northside, like I like to create kind of on the spot, mm-hmm. like in terms of my formations, just feeling out like what should happen next and seeing like, I think something should happen here. I think this needs to expand to really like take up the space. I think I am fortunate that the Northside kids are down to like grind it out for like 3-4 hours, just me trying to put them in spots. Because sometimes when I'm looking at just like a piece of paper with like markings on it, it's hard for me to understand if it feels right. But other people are really good at it, like Michael DeLeva. Oh my gosh, blocking with him is so stressful because it's so organic, but it's a little too organic, you know? It's just like X's here and there, and it's like, and then even arrows. When he's doing it, he's like, oh, and then we'll do this, and then we'll do this. I'm like looking at him, like, I have no idea what any of this means. And then he puts it on and it like just makes so much sense. I'm like, wow, like that is really cool. Like, and I think it's just like everybody has a different process when it comes to that. So yeah.
You obviously direct Brotherhood. You also direct Northside along with Kelvin, who was also on the podcast earlier this season. What's that kind of process been like directing, you know, Brotherhood, but also directing Northside?
Right. I guess, well, when did we start Northside? 2019? Yeah. I mean, I wasn't directing at first. I think we, like, Kelvin was our main director, but then we were all kind of just pitching in, like, creatively. Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah. And then I kind of hopped in during COVID, I would say like 2020. So like the year after is when I like fully was like, all right, like I think I'm here. So yeah, it's been great. It's been different compared to Brotherhood. One, I think sheer number of people, that is not what I'm used to. This, I guess, like just last year was our first year having like more than 40. the year before we were at 30, which is still like pretty manageable. I would say like I've had a little bit of experience with that, but when it gets into 40s, it's just like, there's so many of you, I don't know. And it's like, it's really overwhelming at times. Whereas Brotherhood, it was almost like we had to be really creative with our formations. There was 12 of us and or like 13 of us, and we're up against people with like armies, you know. And I think that's actually like where a lot of, I would say, my formations and creativity like was built on, was because we can't just hit this V for 4 minutes. I mean, we will, but like, you know,
favorite formation,
hopefully
bro,
next time, you know? So I think, that's helped me, grow is trying to be creative with that. And now putting it on 40 though is like, whoa, like this is a lot of people. And then I think just different, personalities, like everybody's different, right? So some people you'll like gravitate towards, other people you might not, and I think that's okay. But trying to, I guess, just maneuver through all of that, and then plus give like good dancing to them, you know. But I really feel like or this last year, they've just really leveled up, and I feel like I've had no choice but also to like give crazy like things to them. So that's been a blessing. It's been really tiring though. Like to feel like every week I have to blow their minds. And not because I have to like try and impress them or anything, but more so these guys are getting really good. And my job is to continue training them. Like we can't just stay here forever. So I felt like I had to like also continue to train, just so I could keep providing for them. So yeah, that's been very different. Very different dynamic from Brotherhood, just all guys in a studio just goofing around. Some rehearsals are super productive. Other rehearsals are just Jesco freestyling and just watching him go full out for 3 hours and like, all right, let's go home.
Dude, that was one of my favorite.
Yeah, it is really super cool to take what I've learned in Brotherhood and also apply it to them, try to teach them. But also at the same time, see where they're different and see how I can figure out what I can change to be better for them, you know? So, yeah, it's been a lot of growth, I think, in the last couple of years. So, yeah.
Sweet. Well, I feel like we can wrap it up and save these questions for the next time you come on.
Heck yeah.
Why don't you plug away? Where can people find you online? Where can they follow you?
Yeah.
Stay updated.
Instagram is at JAdrianZV. I know it's complicated. It's not that complicated. JAdrianZV, okay?
And that comes from?
My first name starts with a J. It's not, my first name's not Adrian. I'm a phony, folks.
What's your first name? I want to share it. Do a lot of people know, or is it just
people know? But like, it's just kind of
on the low.
It's like, yeah, it's a secret.
It'll be a good bingo or trivia question on the podcast. Yeah, so save it.
Yeah, we'll save it. And then the Z is like my mom's maiden name. That's why. So yeah, it looks complicated, but it's kind of nice to say JAdrianZV. I think that's why I kept it. Instagram. TikTok, I guess. I don't know. I'm kind of up and down with TikTok. Some of my stuff goes up like crazy, and then some stuff like nobody's seeing, but that's okay. It's not about the numbers.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the pod today, Adrian. I feel like there's so much gold in this episode that people can just play it back, run through, and just learn away. So thank you for being here, and we will definitely have you back.
Thank you.
Tomorrow. If you like this episode, please subscribe to wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to smash that subscribe button. Leave us a 5-star review if you can. That would be a huge help to us. And thank you for tuning in on this episode of the Studio North Podcast. We will see you next time. Peace.